Thank you very much, Larry, for the invitation to be here. It's a great honor to present this work that is, as you can see here, joint with Daniel Mejia from Universidad de los Andes and Juan Felipe Garcia. And they are the two Colombians in the team. I'm actually from Venezuela, although I'm working on this project in Colombia. And as you see from the title, this experiment that we ran in Colombia is an experiment done within the context of what is now Colombia's main citizen security strategy. And to give you a little bit of context, which is maybe familiar to some of you, maybe foreign to some of you, Latin America is one of the most, or if not the most, violent region in the world. Professor Weisberg this morning mentioned something about having 10 homicides a week being like the worst place on earth. Actually, we have approximately between, well, sometimes 50, sometimes 55. It can even go up to 60 homicides per week in Caracas, one of the most dangerous cities in the world right now. In Central America, these numbers are even higher in some countries. So, and you probably also heard, possibly related to the drug trade and guerrilla groups, and of you know Colombia's citizen security problems are longstanding. And so, this is a country where crime is very, very prevalent, and where, of course, it is. Of utmost importance to understand what works and what doesn't in the fight against crime, because it is one of the most important hindrances to economic and social development in this region. And so I want to just give you a little bit of a diagnosis on the 2 years preceding this program, this intervention, which is called the Plan Cuadrantes, which is a plan of quadrants. That's sort of the broad name, and I'll explain what it consists of in a second. The diagnosis before 2010 was, well, an increasing insecurity in major cities in the country. There was increased perception of insecurity as well. Even though there was high level of trust in the police as an institution in Colombia, there were very low levels of trust in patrol policemen in the street. Also, as part of this diagnosis, internal to the police, there was policemen perceived a very low and ineffective levels of cooperation between agencies of the police, and also very low accountability of police officers with respect to their duties. So what are the main components of the PNVCC, which is the shorthand for Plan Nacional de Vigilancia Comunitaria por Cuadrantes, which is a very, very awful, long name. We just, you know, call it Plan Cuadrantes or Quadrant Plan. So the main components, the first thing is that this is currently the main citizen security strategy of the country. The creator of this plan is General José Roberto León Riaño, and he has now just been named a couple of months ago the head of the National Police, in part thanks to the success of this plan and his leadership in it. And so it is to him that that we should have. We were just talking with my colleague earlier. We should have a version of this award that you have. We should have that in Latin America. And the first person to get it would be General León for allowing the first randomized controlled trial done in policing in Latin America, and to being open to even suggestions of him directly calling police chiefs randomly at my request. So he agreed to that even. We didn't have to go that far, but he was open to even something like that. So he's a real leader in this respect, and someone who we'll probably be talking more about in the future. The plan subdivides the territory into small geographical units. They're called cuadrantes, and then determines a specific set of activities by the police. And there's a list of daily activities, weekly and monthly activities, and they include meetings with the community, leaders and NGOs, interviews with school authorities, and all sorts of very detailed, specific activities that the police, patrol police, has to undertake. It's a combination of this geographical division of the territory, plus a community, an important community policing component, of course. And then there's also a permanence component. Each officer is supposed to remain assigned to a specific quadrant for 3 years. So there are 6 police officers assigned to each quadrant, 2 per shift. And an important component of this is accountability. Each group of police officers, that is, they are responsible or they are accountable to the state of affairs in terms of crimes and contraventions within their quadrant. And there are career progress and financial incentives tied to that. So this is an example of, actually this is not a very good example, because it's probably the smallest number of quadrants within one station. This is one police station in Colombia. This is the area it covers, and this is the division of the 6 quadrants it covers. But just to give you a sense, a better sense of the magnitude of this and the structure of the cuadrantes across these 8 cities, you can see here, was there a laser pointer here somewhere? Is this it?
No.
This is like a robot. So you can see that in Bogota, there are 19 police stations, there's over 750 quadrants. So we have, 40 quadrants per station. That implies that's a very different structure than what we see in Medellin, for instance, where there are about 7 quadrants per station, because there are more stations and less quadrants, of course. And this has changed a little bit over time. So it's important to bear this in mind in the design of the randomization, because the structure of these city-specific structures may play a role in how the program and the training interact with interact with the local reality to produce one kind of effect or another. So you see, this is the pilot, which is not really, this is a very, very big pilot, for a program, because it's a pilot covering, nearly half the population of the country. This is the biggest 8 cities in the country. And so we are lucky to be able to intervene or to participate in the design of the rollout of this program, of part of this, actually, not the actual program, but part of it, involving these. And this is a key number here. This 9,000 patrol police officers are involved in our experiment. So the implementation is basically a set of orders were issued officially in July of 2010. This is, the territory is now structured in this way. Each, police officer is assigned to a specific quadrant, and here are your orders. This is what you need to do every week, every month, every day. So 6 months into the program, there was a survey, which we call a management survey. It's kind of an odd name, but we call it a management survey of police officers, was undertaken to get a sense of how well the program was being implemented and if it was being effective or not. And that was undertaken by an external evaluator with whom we worked very closely. And the idea was to measure the extent to which these specific protocols were being followed, and also to grasp whether police officers understood or there was a shift in the organizational culture, so to speak, regarding patrolling in the street. Because this is the first sort of massive community policing program that was put in place in Colombia, and with such a high priority placed to it, and financial incentives and all this other stuff, it was very comprehensive. So what was the diagnosis? It showed very low levels of in these 5 indicators. Problem solving orientation was measured, complementarity between departments and within departments, co-responsibility, and this was the relationship of the police with the community. follow-up and evaluations, and that was the extent to which operational procedures were followed, and something called management, which measured other things. The conclusion of that was the police officers don't understand the program, nor have the skills to adequately implement it. This was the shocker that came to the authorities and to General León. This organization came back and said, this is simply not being implemented. It's not being done. The police officers are not doing what you ordered them to do. And so this is actually about the time where we came in. And it was proposed that organizational change of this magnitude in this organization required not only the formal instruments, but also such as the rules and the guidelines, but also some soft skills and what we call a cultural adaptation of the patrol police officer to this new sort of way of doing his or her job. Given that diagnosis, it was proposed that additional training in soft skills should provide the appropriate boost to functioning on the ground. So this was the further intervention which we were able to intervene in. It was basically an additional training program designed to give officers soft skills in these five broad areas: organizational change, teamwork, decision-making and problem-solving, conflict resolution, and leadership. So this was supposed to give them sort of better tools to relate to the community and to effectively implement this program. This is also placed in tandem with the hard training of the program, sort of going back through the protocols and going back through the instructions and what the program implied. But what we randomized was this part of the training and not the other part. So that's why I'm sticking to this. So what we did was within each city, we randomly assigned each station to one of three cohorts. Of course, because we can't, in a training program for the police force, you can't exclude, you can't have a true control group, permanent control group. So because you have to train everyone, it would be odd not to. So what we did was basically stagger the training and have the last cohort, the second and third cohort serve as controls for the first cohort. So because of what I said of the crime structures and actually organizational structure within each city being so different, the randomization had to be done within each city. So you see, in Barranquilla, for instance, we have four stations in each cohort, and so on and so forth. This is the illustration of the pre-treatment crime trends. This is homicide, but you could, this is homicide rates, taking the mean out and everything, and you could see that for the 12 months before the implementation of the program, basically there's no difference between the three cohorts, so this sort of verifies that the randomization was adequate. The timeline of the training was, the training program lasted 7 weeks, and so you can see there, the time between the first and second cohorts is about 3 months. So we can measure, so actually what I'm going to show you is basically the difference between treatment and controls in the change of crime between these 12 weeks in 2011 and the same 12 weeks in 2010. So it's a very simple difference estimation, which basically we argue that will give us the impact of the training on crime. So we have data on about 50 crimes and contraventions, 25 of each, and we have this at the block level in each of these cities since 2007. So we can, in fact, measure the effect of the program on all sorts of different types of crime. However, and this is something we're still working on, we don't have data for all of these cities on citizens' perceptions about the police or about their sort of perception of insecurity. And for that, we do have some data for one city, and so we're going to be able to say something about that, but it's not going to be as robust as the rest because it's only one city. So what are we evaluating? We're evaluating the effect of training on crime. It could have a direct effect, and we also want to understand through what channel training may be having an effect on crime. And so for that, what we do is we use these management indicators because there was a second, we do have a second measurement of this management survey, which we can look at how each of the management indicators changed between before and after having received the training for treatment and controls. So we can evaluate also, we can also evaluate the impact of the training on each of these indicators of co-responsibility, et cetera. So, and that's important for understanding how it is that this may be having an effect on crime. So we have a station level measurement of this management survey. So our baseline specification is very simple. You know, we look at the direct effect of being assigned to having received the training at the station level on crime. And why do we do it at the station? Our first statistical unit of analysis is the station, although we can also do it at the cuadrante level. And I'll show you results for homicide on both of those, and I'm not going to bore you with results on, you know, theft and auto theft and home burglaries, but we do have effects on all of those as well. So it's actually a very simple regression. And what we do is we compare pre and post crime rates up to the month where the second cohort enters training. And why are we using only that time window of 12 weeks? Because once the second cohort enters training, what our experimental group basically falls in size by 40 stations, which are the 40 stations of that cohort. And as you can probably, many of you have been, you know, studying these issues recently, know that this is going to be, this has a significant effect on the power of the experiment. And so we have similar results, including the second cohort as part of the control of the treatment group, by extending the time frame the amount of months of crime that we measure, and the results are similar. But because power goes down, the statistical significance of some of this also suffers. So our strongest results are comparing the 3-month time window of July, October 2010 versus the same time window in 2011. Another thing that we're interested in is not only looking at the average effects, but also looking at whether there are differences in the effects across places with different levels of crime. And so what we do is we interact the training indicator with other indicators of the crime decile where each station or cuadrante is in. So what we want to do is we see whether the effect of training is different for different levels of initial crime. That's basically what this is going to tell us. So for homicides, you can see, I don't know if maybe this is not so easy to see, but this is using the data at the cuadrante level. So what I showed you before means that we have, in this case here, we have a little over 1,100 cuadrantes in this data set, which means double the observations because we're looking at them 2 points in time. There was another dimension of staggering in the data, which was that we had to have two groups of cities because of the training teams had to travel around the country, and so they couldn't do the entire first cohort, they couldn't do it all at once, and so there had to be another level of staggering. So that's a technical detail, not very relevant. adjusting for that, that's the difference between so columns 1, 2, and 3, and 6, 7, and 8 is basically including only group 1 or group 1 and 2. Don't pay too much attention to that. The main point is that here, when you look at just the effect of training on homicide rates, you have basically a very small effect. This is 5% of a standard deviation, so this is the effect size, and it's not statistically significant. But once you, we say, okay, what if we interact the training with the level of crime in 2010 to see whether there is a relationship there? And you see that there is, we do get this negative coefficient. So what this says is that the training will have a higher impact, higher negative impact on crime wherever crime in 2010 was higher. So we want to understand a little better, and so we do it by decile, by crime decile. And before, and this is actually very telling, because the reason we only have crime decile 7, 8, 9, and 10 is that by crime decile 6 is basically zero homicides at the quadrante level. So you can see that as it happens in many places, crime is very, very geographically concentrated in Colombia, in these metropolitan areas in Colombia. And what we see here is the very big impact at the very high level of crime areas. This is a 0.7 standard deviation effect. That is a huge impact, huge, by any standard. And this is robust to looking at only the first group of cities or all of the cities included in the study. And you could say, well, why don't you look at the data at the station level, because that's the unit of randomization. So we do that. And for that, so we construct crime quintiles. And the effect is basically the same, 0.7 standard deviations at the very top. So just to conclude, oh, this is important. So we also look at the management indicators. So where, did any of these things improve with the training? You know, there are these measures of diagnosis and follow-up, whether there was internal complementation, external complementation, or the permanence component. And what we see is not too small effect. I mean, it's a 0.1 or 10% of a standard deviation effect on the co-responsibility indicator, which captures the effect to the extent to which police officers gather information and engage members of the community. So the community policing component appears to have improved a little bit in the treatment group as compared to the control group. And this may be sort of part of the explanation of why we see these drops in crime. So I showed you homicide, but this is true for all crimes, basically. All crimes that have a low reporting error. Okay, there's another issue of which, well, does this improve the trust in the police, and so does reporting improve also? So we haven't looked at that yet, but we plan to look at crimes that are usually very underreported, so maybe we'll see a positive impact on reported crimes that are usually not reported, and we could take as a measure of increased trust in the police. So to conclude, we see that this training program contributed to reducing crime, especially in high crime areas. The effects are sizable, 0.7 standard deviations on homicides and home burglaries, and around 1 standard deviation on vehicle theft. That's enormous. Now, you think, okay, how do we grasp this? How do we grasp the importance, the quantitative importance of this for overall crime? And given the high concentration of crime, 85% of homicides in these cities occur in 30% of the cuadrantes. So in the top three deciles that we were looking at, those top three deciles take up or cover 85% of all homicides occur in this time period. So what this means is that if you're having a very large effect in the high crime area, that means that your effect on total homicides is very big. So We estimate that this effect here, given where the program is having the effect and the concentration, this translates into approximately a 20% effect on total crimes. So why would training have such a large effect on crime? That's a big question. We're trying to, understand this better. There's alongside the management survey, there's also a culture survey, which is basically asking the police officers not whether they were doing following the protocols and whether they were relating to the community and all this other stuff. There was objective sort of questions. The culture survey asked the police officers how they felt about what they were doing. You know, did they believe it was valuable to talk to the community? Did they feel responsible towards the community or not? You know? And so and we also have two waves of this survey. And what we see, our preliminary findings, are that the one indicator in the community, in this culture survey, that where training appears to have had an effect is the indicator that measures the extent to which the police officer feels accountable towards the community. Because there's a separate measure for when the police officer feels the community is giving him or her valuable information for crime solving, for crime fighting purposes. So this is different. It's not the reason why in the management survey we find a positive effect on their relationship with the community is not because the community is sort of helping the police officer, but the police officer feels more responsible towards the community and therefore does his job presumably a little bit better, does, patrols a little more, I don't know. So this is basically what we have so far. I could show you many more numbers on the other crimes, but I won't bore you with that because it's the main message. So that's it. Thank you.